market,
the S&P, the ASX
stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that wants to be on the young rich list but isn't young or rich. Ooh. I'm Andrew Page, and with me is Scott Phillips.
We're very good at lists, though.
We are good at lists.
There we go.
We'll run
one
through
of the
one.
Three.
Yes.
G'day,
I don't think,
Thanks
I don't for think that entitles us to be there. But anyway.
All right, let's do it.
We're going to talk a bit about that rich list in a moment. $6 billion men who sit atop that mighty pile of cash.
Indeed.
How they got there, what it all about. And we have to talk about your brain explosion, mate. You knocked me for six throughout the week.
I rode to Damascus, my Damascene conversion.
You think you know a guy? A ticket to fortune or just a ticket?
Stay
we'll see.
Tuned.
We'll talk
tuned.
About that in a moment. We have to talk about some results too.
Yep.
ANZ had some numbers out throughout the week. And Amazon and Alphabet knocking it out of the park again. Alphabet. It's formerly known, the artist formerly known as Google. And we'll talk a bit about that.
Better
as
than a
well.
Peace sign, because it really doesn't work on a podcast.
It doesn't really, does it? No, and we're gonna get you back on your high horse, mate. This poor, poor nag of an animal. His back is very much past its prime.
Hey, be nice.
So, mate, I want to start with a brain explosion. So, we generally work at home. We have a bit of a Skype chat with the other guys.
We do.
We're talking about Bitcoin. We talked about the Bitcoin last week.
We've been talking about Bitcoin for weeks.
We have. Well, it is the new black. It is, everyone's talking Bitcoin.
And I'm on the record of saying you can't value the thing.
It's stupid.
Right.
It's well, stupid.
I don't know, stupid.
Well, how the tune has changed.
So
you dropped this bomb throughout the week saying, oh, hey guys, I bought $100 worth of Bitcoin. And my...
What's the bloody impressions? Thank you very much. Hey guys,
my head exploded, and I just fell off my chair.
Yes.
And not only did you do this, I've gone, all right, okay, fair enough. You know, when are you going to sell? And you say,
you can't sell.
You can't sell. So let's walk through this.
I need to apologize to my darling wife, who may listen to this and think, what the hell have you done?
What the hell have you
done? She doesn't yet know that I bought some Bitcoin. So,
this,
honey, I'm sorry I bought some Bitcoin.
This is very much a case of do as I say, not as I do, I think, as well.
Something like that.
So we have to wind back a little bit here for those that may not have heard us rant on this before. But unless you've been living under a rock, Bitcoin is the new black.
Isn't
it's this cryptocurrency thing invented in 2008.
Mate, I'm with the cool kids.
You are.
I'm
very
looking forward.
Much
I'm young. I'm hip. I'm happening.
I
own Bitcoin.
I'm going to laugh at you a lot until you rock up in like three Ferraris one day on all your Bitcoin money. And anyway, so it's a cryptocurrency, and people have decided, for better or worse, that it is the new thing. The funny thing is, the more people I've talked about it, the conversation usually goes like this. Hey, I bought some Bitcoin. Oh, great. And then the next question is, so what does it do? Like, what? If you can't, you've got that around the wrong way, mate. And here I am sort of, you know, tutting and, you know, they're making megabucks along the way.
It probably is the very definition of a bubble, by the way. Hey, I bought something. What the hell is it?
Well, here's the other thing that I've said to you. I mean, one of the many characteristics of a bubble is that it always goes on longer than you think. So as much as I think it's kind of crazy, I would not be surprised at all if we're here next week. We're going to, by the way, fools, we are going to give you regular weekly updates on this. On Scott's. By the way, how much are you up already?
I'm looking as we speak. I'm dialing up my Coinbase app. We'll talk about that in a second. My Bitcoins are worth $102.
Wait, over 2 days?
Well, $103.39, just updated. There you go.
Whoa, annualize that. Mate, on an annualized basis,
exactly.
that is pretty special.
End of the year, mate, I'm gonna be buying the drinks, put it that way.
Pity can't sell it though, right?
Well, there is that.
So walk God. I think you know a guy. Walk me through that. So you've decided to buy some Bitcoin. Okay, why not? Have a bit of a punt, it's your money. But if you can't sell, well, hey, why can't you sell? And if you can't sell, didn't you just set a $100 note on fire?
Mate, you can't. You melt $100 notes these days.
Well, next
it's
time
been a while just... since you've seen one, but you melt them rather than burning them these days. They're plastic.
Okay.
So look, here's the thing. We've ranted on Bitcoin before, and I'm still on record as saying I think it's a bad investment, generally speaking. It's not the sort of investment a long-term investor should make. It is purely and utterly speculation.
Yes.
And
okay.
And look, so... part of it, so I bought $100 worth of Bitcoin. It's 0.013 something of a Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go, 0.01340301 Bitcoin, okay. Officially.
Okay.
And the look, the story basically was, it was one of those things that we've been talking about for a very long time.
There we go.
Just you and I with the team. No, no, yeah. You and I with
no,
the
no,
team.
No, no, no,
about
see how you're rationalizing.
For,
please go ahead.
For a long time. Yeah. And I just thought, you know what, I might as well at least be part of, I might as well be part of the process, understand what's going on, how it's working.
It's research.
It's research. No.
Give me a break.
I will stand on this, and then you can laugh at me.
I'm already laughing at you, don't you?
Tom Gaynor, who we all both respect and appreciate, mm-hmm. who's the chief investment officer of a mini Berkshire Hathaway in the US.
Yeah.
He has a portfolio, a very concentrated portfolio. Mm-hmm. But he also has another couple of hundred stocks he's going very, very small amounts of.
Yep.
He does it specifically because he believes that having a little bit of skin in the game means you follow along with the company, you understand it better. It's kind of one of those...
forces you to pay attention.
It's a behavioral bias kind of trap, yep. right? Force you to pay
hack.
Attention. Right. A hack. See, you should own the Bitcoins, not me.
I really should.
Anyway, so look, yeah, it was purely a bit of fun. I thought, okay, well, if I was going to buy Bitcoin, A, how does it work? How do you do it? What does it involve? And thought, well, the best way to do it is actually go and do it myself.
What was the minimum transaction? Was it 100 bucks?
I think so, yeah. Might have been 50. I think 100 bucks.
It's
not going to break the bank. If it goes up tenfold, I'm still not going to make a fortune.
Right.
And if it goes to zero, I think 100 bucks,
mate,
I can afford
to
lose.
It could go up a millionfold and you won't make a cent right. because you can't sell. Riddle me that. How the hell does...
Well, which is exactly why I will stand on my point about it being largely research slash a bit of fun, because there is the app I used currently has no relationships. I don't know whether they're not allowed to or they don't have a relationship with a financial institution in Australia. Right. But basically, you can't. There's no way to withdraw the money. Basically.
Well, they certainly made it possible to buy, though.
Funny that, yeah. It might never happen. So to that point, I mean, I've completely lost my mind. Well, that's proof positive to prove my point that it's purely research, because if nothing happens, nothing happens. I likened it this morning when I was talking to you to, you know, $100 magazine subscription.
Right.
I'll follow along. If I get some money out at the end of the process, so be it. If it's yep. double or half, so be it. It literally was about the process. And it was a fascinating kind of exercise to go through, to see what people are doing, how they're doing it, what the transactions are like. It is scarily easy once you set the account to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I could literally buy more while I was standing here talking to you, but I'm neither silly enough nor am I sufficiently unscared of my wife to just go and randomly buy more Bitcoin.
Right.
It was purely part of the fun. But you know what? It does mean, by definition, I've got the app on the phone. Now I check it once a day just for the interest and see what's going on.
Once a day?
Yeah. Once a day.
10 times a day.
Let's be
honest.
In the morning? I check it in the morning.
I think you've already checked it 4 times before we did the podcast.
more for the point of telling you how much
you're
I have.
Right.
I've checked it more than I've checked my share portfolio. Put it
okay,
that way.
Okay. Here I am laughing, but, you know, as I said, we'll follow along week by week here. And I probably won't be laughing
me,
in
by
a
the
few
way.
Weeks'
yeah.
time. I'll probably yeah. be kicking myself. But there you go.
All part of the fun. But as you said to start with, do as I say, not as I do. We don't see anyone does it. Look, if you know.
I have a bit of fun if you're going. Just don't call it investing.
I said to you this morning, it's blackjack money, right?
Yeah, totally.
I put it on the table. I've called it, put it on black. If it comes up, then I win some money. If I don't, I lose the money. It's just one of those things. And I don't want to be completely reckless with it. I'm not saying 100 bucks doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just that in this case, it literally is a part of just kind of getting inside the ecosystem and seeing how it works out.
Speaking of behavioral bias, I do have a little bit of FOMO at this point in time. I kind of think,
get
an idiot.
The FOMO,
what
boss.
An idiot. Maybe I should do it too.
You got FOMO, I've got YOLO. Between us, we've got it all covered.
We've got all the acronyms covered.
We're with all the cool kids.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
So when you are rich,
yes.
From your Bitcoin
investment
bonanza, you might make it onto the rich list. I'm sad to say, mate, you won't make it onto the young rich list. That ship has sailed.
That's very unkind.
That ship has sailed.
The middle-aged rich list, one of those?
I don't even think they break it up into brackets. You're either young or you're not.
That's what I hate about that. I said, if you're young enough, you're rich, you're great. Other than that, you kind of don't count.
What is the age cutoff?
40.
40? Ship has sailed. So... I think I'm actually technically like a few months older than you, so I should probably shut up.
A few days.
Yeah. So they do the young rich list.
They do.
It's the top 100.
The AFR does it.
This year it had the top 100 rich Australians under the age of 40 had a combined net wealth of $13.2 billion. Now, who topped the list?
I like to call this the envy list.
Yes.
And I mean this because not
everyone's
only are
they
rich, a wanker
on
they're
on
also
this
young.
List until
like, for the
I
love
make
of Christ.
It. Yeah, right.
I don't mind them being young or rich, but give us something, you know?
Know.
When you get to a certain age, you've got to at least have one of those things going for you. When you got neither, it's just depressing, really.
Isn't it? What?
I was going to swear then, I won't.
So it may not come as much of a surprise that the Atlassian dudes Co-founders Mike Cannon-Brookes and Scott Farquhar have topped that list.
Now, well, it will come to us as a shock for most people who don't even know what Atlassian is.
Well, we'll circle back on that in a moment. Right? I've done some research for once in my life, so I need to spout out some figures.
You just want to rate it the stuff you've written down, don't you?
Totally,
and then we'll go back and talk about
totally
it.
Totally.
All right. Tell us what you know.
So they have a combined net worth of $6.07 billion.
Is
now, last year they were at the top of the list, and they did that with $4.6 billion. Now, here's what blew me away. Such is their domination.
Yes.
That they are almost 10 times ahead of places 3 and 4.
Wow.
And I think their entire net wealth actually makes up about half of the entire list. That is how much.
So the two richest blokes are as rich as the next 98.
Yep, and they're 37.
Bastards. The only good thing about that is in a 3 is we don't have to look at that number anymore.
Yes.
It'll be 40, then I'll be okay with that.
That's true. So you tell me, you get the hard part. You tell me what Atlassian is.
Thank you very much.
Before you throw it to me.
Oh, nice work. Nice turnaround. I'll get you back later. Atlassian is a workplace communication kind of project set of pieces of software, tools. And they've kind of, interestingly enough, they're kind of in a couple of different directions. There's a base kind of underlying software code that underpins most of this stuff. But they kind of do different things. So there's largely project management and inter-office communication. They're two biggest apps, if you like, the old killer app thing. There's a new thing called workplace messaging or workplace communications. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite Skype and it's not quite email. It's kind of somewhere in between that. We use one at work called Slack.
Yeah.
Atlassian have their own. And this is the big thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a combination of message board / email / group communication. It's kind of hard to explain if you've had a go with it. Right.
Yeah.
Lots of buzzwords there.
Yep.
But lots of businesses are picking it up because it does make sense. We got rid of an intranet at work. Yep. Now we only use this Slack messaging app to do all of that
stuff.
Cool. Right. So
yeah.
It does work and it's pretty cool, as you say. They've made $1 squillion. They have a version of that. They have a project management software, a couple other bits and pieces, but those two are the bulk of the Atlassian business. They're listed on the US exchanges about...
on the NASDAQ?
12, 18 months ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
And now we're worth $6 billion.
It's amazing.
Nice work if you can get it.
It is amazing. But how quickly this list changed, doing my deep dive into the research here, it was Nathan Tinkler who was like top of the list. They remember Nathan Tinkler? The mining bankrupt.
Mm.
So when the commodity boom was flying high, he was at the top of the list.
Miner and horse race owner, as I recall.
That's right. And
former friend of Jerry Harvey's.
That's right. Not anymore.
Correct. I owes him some money.
And they knocked him off. I think it was going to say back in 2008 or 9 or so. And so he does change a lot. That's the thing with this list is, I was seeing a lot of stuff in the paper this week about Buffett hitting a new all-time record. It's just when a lot of your wealth is based on shares or assets that are regularly quoted, it will fluctuate around. So things can move around very, very, very quickly here.
Yep.
But I would bet, well, if we're still doing this podcast in a year's time, which is an open question, but if we are, I would say that these guys will not only still be at the top of that list, but I would dare say that their wealth will have increased dramatically again.
Unbelievable. Interestingly enough, you were talking about Warren Buffett and the record wealth. I did Google that earlier in the week, and the research result I had was Berkshire sets record as Trump boosts prospects.
Yeah, that's
that,
right.
That was 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Not that, year and a half ago.
Yeah, amazing.
Dear, dear. All right.
That's a whole other thing.
Indeed.
That is a whole other thing. Shall we move on?
Yes.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's talk about company profit results.
I only want to talk about companies that start with A.
Okay. Well,
I've had enough.
Today is your lucky day.
126 of the alphabet is all I'm doing today.
Fair enough. And you've got to start at the beginning.
Well, might as well.
If we're going to start at the beginning...
a very good place to start, as the musical song went.
That's it.
I won't sing it for you. We'll put that in the podcast extras.
Okay.
When we get email us, let us know you want to hear me sing that song, and I guarantee you it absolutely won't happen.
Crickets. if we're going to start at the beginning, let's start at home.
Okay.
And our very own ANZ, Australian New Zealand Banking, yes, they had a really stonker of a result
they
here,
did.
In fact. So $6.9 billion in cash profit. That's a rise of 18%.
Is it any wonder that Australians hate banks when they're making $7 billion off us?
Well, we do, and it's a love-hate because I think virtually every Australian owns a bit of ANZ Bank.
That's true too.
Now, whether you own shares directly or not, if you've got super, and pretty much everyone does, you're guaranteed to own some of this. So we kind of hate them and at the same time want them to keep making money and go up,
that's
right?
That's true.
So there's one way to align interests. It's that way.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting result. Now, what was interesting was the actual net interest income that they made, and that's how banks make their money by and large, was down.
Yep.
So how do you get an 18% lift in your profit when you've made less interest income.
So let's say the net interest margin, as the banks call it, is the difference between the cost of their borrowing and what they lend to us at. So they make a margin on the difference.
Yep.
That's their net interest margin. You borrow at one, you lend out at two.
Yep.
1% is your difference.
Nice.
That number, you want the banks to grow that. They haven't been able to recently.
Yes.
So they've done the next best thing. They fired some people.
You know what? They have fired more than some people. Back in 2015, they had rounding here. They had about 50,000 full-time staff.
Right.
By the way, there's a sign of just how big these institutions are. That's one of the big four. 50,000 full-time staff back then. 50,000 plus, I should say. Mm. Today, it's about 44,000. So there's a lot of people who they've really sort of, I was going to say, trim the fat. That's a very unfair term, but they have pared back on that staff expenditure in a very big way.
12% reduction in staff in a couple of years.
It's a pretty big chunk, and that's what's driven it. They also had a very, very good result in their institutional banking arm as well, which jumped up quite a lot as well in a very sort of volatile area.
Interesting enough, too, I will say that if you just a quickly tangent, we talked, I think, in a couple of podcasts ago about cashless economy and the fact we're using more plastic these days. Part of that and part of the bank fee kind of change with the cash withdrawals is that with the amount of us going into a branch who are actually using those person-to-person, even frankly cash transactions, is just falling dramatically. Even though a lot of us think, well, I haven't been in the bank branch in years, those people who are still going to branches are doing it less often as well. And so you get this weird situation where more and more of our business is being done online.
Yeah.
It's being done with plastic.
Yeah.
If it's done with cash, it's done through an ATM. So there's just simply fewer and fewer banking services required by the average punter going into a branch saying, hey, can I talk to you about something? And that's driven most of that.
I would say literally I have not been in a bank branch for 18 months.
Yeah.
And before then it was probably another 18 months.
Right.
You've got no reason to.
Those
and mean, even going, I only go to an ATM once every blue moon these days as well.
I've made a point. So I was... Where did I go? I went to the Gold Coast. Was it a month and a half ago?
Yeah, sounds about right.
So I haven't been to an ATM since. I made a point of kind of just keeping an eye on. I'm trying to use the card as much as I can, or the phone. I've got the phone app. We're not using it much, and so I think what you'll find, those with decent memories will remember a whole lot of bank branch closures. Probably 10 years ago, I want to say, massive public backlash, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I reckon we're probably a year or two away from another round of those because we're simply using branches so much less, so much less cash.
Just don't need them.
Yeah, well, exactly. And those who do want to go to a branch need to talk to somebody.
Yeah,
but there are many, many fewer of us doing that. I think at some point we're going to find a whole lot more closures coming through.
I've been reasonably negative on the banks for a while, 2 or 3 years or so.
Mm.
And I've always, not that, you know, I think they're disasters or anything. I've always just wondered, where is the growth going to come from?
Right.
And, you know, for better or worse or luck or otherwise, it's actually proven to be the case. But what I missed was just how substantially they could move that bottom line just through cost cutting. Now, unfortunately, cost cutting is something that has limited value. You can't cut your staff by 12% every year.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're just going to have one person there. But wow, 18%, right? Yeah. And so here's the question I think we always need to end up on when we talk about specific companies, particularly those on the ASX and particularly those that a lot of listeners might have some exposure to.
Right.
Is you sort of look at it and go, okay, for better or worse, they've done that. These guys are paying, 5.2, 5.3% of a fully franked yield.
Right.
Are you a buyer of the banks?
Not for capital growth. I think I've said before, I think if you're an income investor and you want fully franked dividend income and you don't care about beating the market, the income is your favorite. I think there's a place for the banks.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't be buying them. I think they're getting some okay growth on the back of massive house price growth. I just don't think that'll keep going. I think you'll find that'll come to if not a screaming halt, it'll come to a massive slowdown. And I think that's probably bad news overall.
Well, I think like that's kind of where I sit there as well. Plus, I've sort of talked before about the potential asymmetry of returns. If things do get a little bit, if things do get a little bit nasty, it could be pretty bad for the banks. Interestingly enough, forgetting about what may or may not happen in the future, I think what will surprise a lot of people, we all know what's happened with house prices over the last three years. If you had bought ANZ Bank 3 years ago and you include the dividends, very, very juicy dividends that you've gotten along the way, you've actually only averaged about a 2.5% return over that period.
Right.
So there is something to be said for value. And I just put that in there so I can make myself sound a little bit smarter for not investing. But even if you go back 10 years, you know, ANZ, you would have got 6% per, and that's not terrible. That's not terrible, but it's not great. Over a 10-year period, NAB was even worse. You got about 4%. So this is not adjusted for inflation either. So I find that interesting that if they are delivering those kinds of shareholder returns in an environment where the wind is at their back,
yep.
it is interesting.
We should say, of course, that it's not just the banks who set those prices, right? Sometimes if the shareholder returns are down, it's because people paid stupid amounts.
Yeah, totally, totally.
So if the shares 10 years ago were paying too cheap prices now or vice versa. Yes. So the bank isn't responsible for its share price any more than Woolies or someone else would be. But you make a good point. For all of the love that's shown to our banks, they haven't exactly earned it over the last decade.
Well, I would say, look, just I'll quote you some other numbers now because I've got really in front of me.
So it's a podcast.
I know, but I'm going to do it anyway. So you talk what they do.
Man, we could put a marker here, mate. Just when Adam when he finishes talking, we'll just start up again.
Sure.
All right, thanks, Mark. All right, so go on.
Bastard.
Ready? Go.
Screw you guys. When dividends have increased by 1.1% per year for NAB over the last 10 years, that ain't special. Their earnings have dropped. By about 1% per year over the last 10 years. Right. 10 years. Biggest property boom in Australian history. Okay, maybe I'm being unfair picking on NAB. ANZ, they've only grown their earnings by about 3% per year over the last. It's not spectacular. It's not spectacular.
And cut. All right, from the sublime to the ridiculous, or from the ridiculous to the sublime, let's talk about a couple of our overseas brethren.
Now let's talk companies. About some really cool companies.
A couple of my favorite companies. I own one of them. I'll put my hand up for one and we'll get to that in a second. Two big, big tech behemoths, both starting with A because I'm on a strike for the rest of the alphabet
sure,
right now.
Sure.
Amazon and Alphabet.
You own Amazon shares.
I do own
you
Amazon own shares, thankfully.
Do you own Alphabet?
No, because I'm an idiot.
You know, every almost month I go, when the AI overlords overtake us, you know, it's the people who own shares in some of the big tech giants that are probably going to fare best. Mm-hmm. And I really got to stop overthinking that and just buy some. I've got to pull my finger out. You don't want to overthink it. I just think they are phenomenal. And here's the amazing thing with both Alphabet and Amazon. So when you're in microcap land, you're in some of these small companies, they've got very, very small bases, and you will see companies growing their sales and growing their earnings by pretty high double digit amounts.
Right.
You know, if you and 10, I have
20%,
a tiny little business, we've got 5 clients. Next year we have 10. We've really only added 5 clients, but we've right. potentially doubled our sales.
Right? Double sales, right?
Yeah. You know, it's easier to do. The amazing thing about what these guys have done is that these are absolute behemoths. So Alphabet shares above $1,000 each after hours trade. Their sales were up 24% to $27.8 billion, right? With Amazon, the rise
so just,
was...
Just to put that in context, they added about $6 or $7 billion worth of sales.
Amazing.
Added. Not that, that's not the total size. That's the amount they increased by versus
off
last year.
The base that they had. Amazon was even more spectacular. Yep. $43.7 billion in sales. That was up by more than a third.
Right, so adding $10 billion worth of new sales.
And this has been, you know...
From a company that's already the number one online retailer that everyone already knows, that sells to every country in the world.
Yep.
And they still...
The everything
despite
store.
20 years of domination.
Yeah.
It's like Woolworths all of a sudden increasing sales by a third. Like it doesn't happen, right?
It boggles the mind. And bizarre. And I would speculate that we are set for several more years, at least, probably a lot more, of double digit top line growth.
Shares in Google were over $1,000 a share after hours, as was Amazon.
So they've got a bit of short interest in these companies too. Do we want to go down that rabbit?
There wasn't until today.
So a lot of people in Amazon were shorting it. You look at it, we've talked about Amazon before on the podcast. You look through some of these traditional metrics, and it's just crazy expensive. They only just started making a profit, right?
They've kind of made profits on and off. They're not making much money.
They're not much, right?
On $43 billion worth of revenue, they made about $250 million worth of profits.
And it's
a rounding error.
And it's because they're reinvesting it all, and they're generating...
spectacular results.
Spectacular results.
Right.
And they've got... I think a long way to run. I just think you again, I'll end up with the same question. Are you, no surprises here for the answer, are you a buyer, Mr. Phillips, of Amazon
I
or
think
Alphabet?
Amazon and Alphabet are absolute buyers. I think every Australian investor should have exposure to the US tech sector.
Yeah.
If I was an Australian investor with a US trading account, I would be buying Amazon and Alphabet.
Mm.
And frankly, if you don't have one, you should get one. These are going to be... I wrote an article for Fairfax Press the other day, basically why I own Amazon and why you should too. These guys are going to eat the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can own the Woolworths and the JB Hi-Fis and Harvey Normans. You might do okay with those companies. You need to own Amazon. It's one of those companies that is going to be bigger and better in 10 years than it is today. If you're an investor and you want to be exposed to the retail space, not having Amazon is like trying to fight with one hand tied behind your back. I think it's mad.
Yeah.
And similarly, Alphabet, these guys are just the absolute absolutely dominant global players in search and in advertising.
Yeah.
Maybe it goes away. There's a bear case around app-based advertising that Google don't control potentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a long bow. I think, you know, like, honestly, risk-reward. And frankly, the PEs on particularly Google,
yeah,
what, 20 times or something?
Mate, there are mature stocks in our domestic market that trade on much higher multiples.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it is
a funeral
amazing
services business that trades on over 20 times earnings. You compare that with the hypergrowth of Google and you think, well, hang on, which one do you want to own?
Yeah, yeah. I should say I do own some through an ETF in the US, but I need more direct exposure.
You do.
Hold me to that, mate.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Now, Liam, cue sound effects. I've caught him off guard there. There he is.
There we go. That can mean only one thing.
It can mean only one. Strap yourselves in. What are you going to rant about today?
Oh, up on my high horse.
Yeah, go for
high ho, silver away. Liam, can we have that for next week? Can we have the Lone Ranger thing for next week? There we go.
Okay. Right.
There we go. Two for the price of one. How good value is our podcast?
You've built it up, man. You better make it good.
I've got nothing to talk about.
Oh, really?
No, I'm kidding. Oh. I'm going to... Here's the thing. So iCensure is a media monitoring company that some people will know if you're listening. And if you are listening and you do know it and you own the shares, you're probably licking your wounds today because they lost $1 squillion. Shares are down a very long way. They lost 35 or 40%
pretty big
on Thursday alone on the back of really, really poor results. And here's the interesting thing. We were talking before about how the CEO kept his job. And I'm gonna defend him, not because I think he's necessarily right, because I think the culture we have in this country of wanting someone to pay for everything, this PR...
You need someone to fall on their sword.
It is absolutely mad, complete and total madness. He has wasted a lot of shareholder money. The board has wasted a lot of shareholder money. Mm-hmm. They have completely cocked it up.
Yeah.
But the question is, should they go just because of that? Mm. Now, imagine if Warren Buffett had made a mistake in his first year of investing and we said, Buffett's got to go. He can't be chairman of Berkshire Hathaway anymore.
Yeah.
And the next 49 years would have been worth nothing. What if Jerry had messed up his first store, Jerry Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
No more Harvey Norman because he messed up his first store, he's out.
Yeah.
I think we make the mistake as investors, as people. We do the same with our politics for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. We were always looking for a head to roll, a scalp, a something. Football coaches are the same. Football
newsletter advisors?
We are very, very important people. Right. But we're always looking for a head to roll. We're always looking for someone to blame or some responsibility to assign, some way of kind of solving our primal need for revenge and for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely complete crap. Now, if you think about, you know, let's again use the Warren Buffett example. How many mistakes would you have let Warren Buffett make through his career if he knew he was going to get to here? As many as he wanted to, right?
Yeah, right.
So just saying to someone, you made a mistake, you lost some money, you are therefore gone.
Mm-hmm.
We mistake any outcome for responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We underplay dramatically the role of luck in both success and in failure.
Yep.
When someone succeeds because of luck, we say, oh, they're wonderful people. Mm-hmm. When someone fails, we say, you got to go.
Yeah.
And in neither case do we say, it's probably a bit of luck there. Branson might have got lucky. Buffett might have got lucky. Jerry Harvey, Frank Lowy might have got lucky. Now, they worked bloody hard. They did a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm.
So they deserve to be lauded or pilloried because they made one mistake or had one success? I just don't think so.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
I don't know why you disagree with me. It's always a losing proposition, mate.
Saying I do.
It's always a losing proposition. I'm right far more than I'm wrong. When I'm wrong, I'm still right.
The iCentia story as closely, but
that's because you didn't recommend it as your service.
That's right. I just wanted to get that in.
Yeah, he's got poor members who bought the shares.
Well,
sorry.
So it's one of those things where I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I'll use another example quickly. Of Blackmores got into baby formula with a partnership with Bega.
Yes.
And well, their quarterly results out yesterday, and they've announced that they're terminating that.
Yep.
And I would say, because I have recommended Blackmores, that actually that was cool because that was an opportunity that was definitely worth a try. There was a big upside. And I'm a big believer in doing things as long as there is a cogent, rational argument for doing it.
Exactly.
And importantly, if the business is one that can fail quickly. So there's nothing wrong with trying something if there's a nice potential for returns. Where companies make mistakes and where shareholder value gets destroyed is when, like, a bull at a gate or an ostrich with their head in the sand, they just keep moving ahead on something that is clearly broken. So there's that. And so there's nuance here in terms of, well, how quickly should have they killed this deal?
Sure.
And then you could have potentially in this case made the argument that, look, why are you guys getting involved in this? There was a rationale for it, but how sensible was the rationale? So I agree that you have to take risks. I agree that there's a huge amount of luck in all of these things. But at the same time, you have to judge these decisions at the time on their merit, and some will have more merit than others.
Oh yeah, and look, if the decision was fundamentally flawed for obvious reasons,
right,
then there should probably be some sort of hell to pay, right? But we all make mistakes. We all take these risks,
yeah,
and we celebrate risk takers who win, and we punish risk takers who fail. And I think
well, failure is a part of it, right? You can't.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly the point. Yeah. So you think about as investors, it's a great example, right? Mm. Peter Lynch, the famous US fund manager, said, if you're great in this game, you'll be right 6 times out of 10.
Mm.
You know, that's kind of the story. And so do we say you made 4 mistakes, you're out?
Mm.
Or do we say, like a Warren Buffett, well, you made some mistakes. Some of these businesses he bought went bankrupt. Stone Motherless bankrupt.
Yeah.
So is Buffett a terrible stock picker? Of course he's not.
Mm.
That's just the reality of doing what we do. And I think when we ignore what psychologists call the counterfactual, in other words, what might have happened otherwise, when we just say this is what happened and therefore you were great or terrible, we're missing the entire point, we're missing the nuance there. And if you invest, if you make decisions, if you vote, quite frankly, according to those sort of rules, you are mad, because you're simply saying whatever ended up happening was always going to happen, rather than allowing for the fact that there's a truckload, not a shitload, because I won't say shitload, I'll say truckload. There's a truckload.
Don't say that.
I won't say that. There's a truckload of luck in all of these things, and calling people's heads when they fail, lauding people ridiculously when they succeed are both stupid things to do. Understand the overall, frankly, reality and outcome.
Yeah.
If they take enough risks, if they have enough outcomes, then start to judge them on their merits. Otherwise, it's pure luck.
I would say, just as a more broader point, not just specifically in terms of what I sent to happen.
This is my horse, get off.
But I think a lot of companies get into trouble through acquisitions. Acquisitions are a wonderful way to juice profits and ultimately shareholder returns and shareholder value. It's great.
Yep.
We know from history and statistics tell us that, generally speaking, 2/3 of acquisitions do not work out.
Yep.
A third about, you know, don't really do much for the better or the worse, and a third absolutely destroy value. So it is something that I think the market inevitably gets very carried away with these things, even though the stats are very much against them. And generally speaking, when it goes against them is when you have a company that has a really nice business model, a really decent competitive advantage, and they go into a new geography, a new market. They go outside of their area of expertise. You know, there's culture mismatches. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong. So I am one who says that when you see a company doing, you know, wonderful slide presentations of what this thing is going to mean and how much synergies they're going to unlock and how much is going to, that's all good and it's all entirely plausible, but I think it's always worth looking at with a very healthy degree of skepticism.
So here's the thing, I completely agree with that, but don't forget that even the ones that go well can do fantastically well. When Google bought YouTube for $1.6 billion, people thought they were mad.
Yeah.
It turned over last year $66 billion in revenue.
Wow.
So yes, you're right, 2/3 of acquisitions might go badly.
Yeah.
Does that mean you shouldn't do it? Well, you tell Google they shouldn't have made the acquisition of YouTube, or
Google's made a ton of acquisitions that have been disasters. Right. But again, what they have done is they go, it didn't work out, and they put a bullet in it. Take it out the back, they shoot it, and they bury it in the ground. And that is the smart thing to do.
Correct.
We better wrap it up, mate.
That'll do.
Before you go, or before we go, more to the point, don't forget, I've got to tell you something. Sorry, mate.
Oh, no.
Not good. Well, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley.
Thanks for listening.
Now that you got this Bitcoin money, you don't need us. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or an Android podcast app.
And you should.
I use Beyond Pod for what it's worth. No affiliation, but I do recommend them. I do like them. If you like what we're doing, please give us a nice, big, fat 5-star rating. It helps spread the foolish word. And why not visit fool.com.au/MMM. Until next time, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.